The psychedelic revolution is here. If you want to integrate your visionary experiences into your purpose, get clear on your entrepreneurial path, and help people while you do what you love, then this podcast is for you. Welcome to The Psychedelic Entrepreneur, Medicine for These Times. I'm your host, Beth Weinstein. I'm a spiritual business coach, three-time entrepreneur, and a lifelong student of psychedelics and sacred plant medicines. You carry your own unique medicine, and your medicine is what we need for these times. This podcast will help you to share your medicine so you can create transformation in the world. Listen in on conversations with psychedelic leaders, changemakers, and conscious entrepreneurs who are living proof that a better world is possible when you follow your heart and live in alignment with your soul. Hey everyone, welcome back. Today is going to be a really fun and funny episode because we are speaking with Dennis Walker of the Micropreneur podcast. Hey Dennis, thank you for being here today.
What's up, Beth? This is a pleasure. Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to getting into it right now.
Oh my God, I cannot wait to get into it. I've been trying to get an interview with you for months and here we are finally. So if you don't know Dennis, you have to start following him on the social medias. I follow him on Instagram because I'm probably too old to be on TikTok, under Micropreneur Podcast, right?
Correct.
So Dennis is a satirist and multimedia producer from San Diego, California. He's coming to us from Mexico. And after studying psychedelics under a TikTok plant medicine influencer in 2021, that would be like too long ago. Maybe like it was late 2022. He started microdosing, is now an expert on the psychedelic renaissance. In his free time, he enjoys interpretive dance, Tuvian throat singing, and swimming with whales in Tonga. And as you can tell, that was a totally made up, completely funny bio that Dennis had submitted. But Dennis, I would love to know what's your real deal? I know you actually, you know, have studied this, and I think you're actually know a little thing or two about mushrooms and cultivating, but I'm curious, you know, what's your story and how do you get into this work?
Sure. So first off, I send a different fake bio to every conference, every podcast. I don't know why. It's just something, it's fun for me. I really like this stream of consciousness, off the cuff sort of joviality. And, you know, so the bio there is a reflection of that. But in earnesty, I have been studying psychedelics and media for many years. It's something that I fell into, as many people do. And I had an expedited route into, you know, my first year really formally studying media was in 2007 when I enrolled as a freshman at the University of San Francisco. And I started off as an English major. And then I was an environmental studies major. I was going to, you know, curb global warming and all this. And then I realized media is such a powerful tool. Really, I got into the program because I like the other people. You know, I was spending time with other people. I'd been in the program at USF for a few months. And I thought, these are great people. I want to make movies. I want to make media. Let's do this. And I had already had a baseline of experience with psychedelics up to that point, where I had had a macrodose with mushrooms when I was a senior in high school in a very solo, intentional setting in a dark room. So I got to see that there was a lot more to the psychedelic experience than maybe I had kind of heard or gleaned from peers at school who used mushrooms and psychedelics in a more recreational capacity. And so having that experience really opened my mind up to a lot of this untapped potential, both within me and just out there in the world. And it came at a pivotal time in my life where, you know, I'm leaving home, I'm going off to school, I've got all these questions about who I am, where I fit into the world. And as many people can attest to, having that first macrodose, like one-on-one experience with an entheogen, is a great way to experience a confluence of the different parts of your personality, the different questions that you have, even if they don't all get answered. In my experience, it really broadened my perspective, opened my mind up to the possibility that there's a lot more out there than I have been taught, than I have experienced, that I've learned. So basically, had a macrodose, got really interested in psychedelics, got into a media program, and they all started flowing together. Because, you know, living in San Francisco, as you mentioned, that you grew up in the Bay Area, it's part of the fabric of the Bay Area culture is to have these psychedelic experiences, to learn about the legacy before you of all these different characters like Alan Watts and, you know, the Beatniks, Allen Ginsberg and Janis Joplin. I remember being a freshman sitting on Hippie Hill with my guitar and hearing people say, oh, Janis Joplin wrote this song in that tree or whatever. And so that really shaped me, you know, early on. And much like many other people, I had to kind of be very cautious about who I shared these experiences with because it wasn't accepted at the time. You know, being in college, I could talk about it. But after I graduated, sort of my bubble burst and I had to be an adult and I had to apply for jobs and I had to live in a pretty difficult sort of, you know, post-2008 financial crisis world. So I had to kind of like keep all this psychedelic experience, which was really robust at that point. You know, I was a frequent flyer for sure. I had to keep it under the radar. And then just a couple of years ago, I felt a sense of permission to really start speaking about it and to kind of use these tools that I had learned about media production, audio, video, storytelling, et cetera, and to kind of fuse my longstanding psychedelic experience and interests with media. So that's essentially the path I'm on now. And satire has proven to be a really fruitful extension of that.
Thank you so much for sharing that. No, it's really interesting because, of course, you know, my story was a little similar, you know, starting my very first psychedelic journey. Obviously, the Bay Area, I would say, had the biggest influence on that, was by myself at a very young age as a teenager. And it was like, you know, that life-changing experience. I'm curious, you know, when you first started in this kind of media micropreneur world, you know, did you start as satire or was it like you just started seeing what was out there in the world and making fun of it and then all of a sudden it took off? Like, were you actually trying to start a serious discussion about mycology?
It was so surprising that this whole micropreneur umbrella took the detail into satire. It was never something that was planned. Like, I started this as a podcast where I was interviewing mushroom entrepreneurs, and I still do that by and large. A lot of people don't even know that I actually have a podcast. They're like, you just make satire. But like, I made a video one day, just kind of, I saw someone make a reel. I don't even remember who it was or what it was, but I thought, I know how to produce video. I have a video production company. I've been doing it for years with my wife, right? How come I've never combined video production with, you know, comedy, which seems to land really well right now, and what I'm doing with micropreneur? And it was one of those accidentally on purpose things where you try something and then it takes on a life of its own. And the response was overwhelming. And I realized, like, I'm pretty good at this. You know, this is something that I didn't know I was good at, but like the response is there. It didn't take me a long time to do it. And it sent me essentially on this detour that has become the primary focus of micropreneur. And the feedback that I get, right, is that, yeah, we need to use satire. And I like to distinguish it as satire rather than just comedy, because I think satire has a moral component to it. So you can bring in these broader dialogues talking about things like, you know, indigenous reciprocity or cultural appropriation or, you know, all of these tense talking points that are starting to come up if you kind of gravitate around the psychedelic sphere. You see that there's a lot of tension right now. There's a lot of division over votes. There's division over the right way to mainstream psychedelics, if there is a right way. And I realize, like, satire is a great vehicle for engaging these conversations. And people, it's almost like a Trojan horse where people aren't so threatened by it. They're not so triggered by it because they recognize that's a joke. That person shouldn't be fully taken seriously. And I realized, what a secret weapon right now to have. So that's essentially kind of what I've been doing. And then there came a point where I was like, I'm just going to push this. I'm going to push some buttons. I'm going to like push the envelope. And I started kind of trying to take on as controversial topics as I could. And rather than getting pushback, I actually got more people who were like, wow, this is awesome. What you're doing is awesome. So now I'm in this position where, you know, I'm trying to tell people, like, don't take me too seriously. But at the same time, like, you know, if you see something in these videos that resonates with you and you see some good talking points, maybe I cryptically embedded them in there to further this conversation. Maybe I didn't. Maybe it's just an accident. So I think satire is a great, totally underutilized vehicle, especially for the psychedelic space in 2023.
I'm so glad you said this because, you know, when I first started seeing your videos, and of course, I think I found you through our common, you know, friend and kind of a former client of mine. And I started listening and I was like, wow, he's saying all those things that we're thinking. And all the things that I would say to other friends of mine who work in this world, like, we would have side conversations about the same thing, but in the public world, we would never say it. You know, I've started, you know, I do have to say, like, people like you, and there's, you know, maybe a couple other people, but you're pretty much like the one I listen to the most when it comes to the satire. You know, it's given us permission to actually speak up about certain things that maybe we weren't ready to say, you know, and like, and I've always kind of really struggled with, like, how do I speak my truth without spewing a bunch of criticism and creating more division, because that's like not the path I'm on. Because like you said, it's very tense. I mean, I've been, even one of my, who I used to consider like a colleague and a friend, like went and like canceled me over something she just didn't agree with. It was actually like, you know, it really wasn't that controversial, but she went and wrote a whole email about me. And it was like heartbreaking to me to see, like, was that really necessary? You know, and there could have been like a more productive way to approach it, like go speak your voice without actually like pointing the finger at someone, especially if I'm not actually doing anything wrong. You know, it was like over just something she didn't agree with. But yeah, let's get into this. You know, I'd like to hear a little bit more about this division and the tension, because I have noticed this, and I'm sure it's also, it's like as above, so below, the entire world is quite tense. But the whole psychedelic world, you know, I refuse to use the word industry, space, ecosystem, whatever we want to call it. It does feel very tense, you know, as fast as it's moving, things are changing. Everybody seems to like feel that their way is the right way. And I come from a Buddhist background that is really from this place of like, who are we to say what's right or wrong? Like, I don't actually believe that there's only one way. I do believe in like, you know, many different ways and ways to bring things into balance with reciprocity. But also, you know, hey, if someone wants to go drink ayahuasca in some Brooklyn loft with some dude who ordered it on Amazon who never trained, am I the one to say that's bad? You know, I don't know. I'm curious, like, what are your views on all this? Because, you know, you've posted some things recently, like the TikTokers talking about DMT vape pens and, you know, things like this that have been like kind of heart-wrenching. Like, oh my God, I can't believe people are saying this. But what are your views on this? Like, should there be like police out there, you know, telling people what's right or wrong? Or should we just be educating with, you know, like your voice, your satire? You know, how do you feel about this?
Yeah, it's a slippery slope because I strongly believe in cognitive liberty. And I've certainly accessed these tools in many different environments that are not just limited to ceremonial contexts, although I've done that too. And so where I come from, I guess, is there's no right way to do it, I don't think. I don't believe in a hierarchy of set and setting. I believe that you can have a profound experience anywhere. And, you know, I caught some flack for making a post once saying that I had a profound spiritual experience in Tokyo on mushrooms at the robot restaurant. And, you know, that's not everybody's cup of tea, because I also will say that, you know, used irresponsibly or, you know, by people who maybe don't have the grounding necessary or the appropriate baseline of experience, like psychedelics can get kind of crazy. And I'm sure you've seen that. I've seen unstructured use and I've done unstructured use. And I would advocate that people really recognize that it's not all just blanket positivity and blanket benefit. I think that it'd be very naive not to recognize that there's the potential for abuse with psychedelics. And we're starting to see that, right? We're starting to see power dynamics and underground communities that are really coming to a head and people are talking about it now. I've been down to Peru. I was very fortunate and went down there years ago, right? So like this kind of narrative that's coming out about people, especially like a white guy saying like how you should do this. No, that doesn't make sense to me. Like I believe strongly in cognitive liberty, but I think where I'm coming from is my primary goal is to be funny. It's not to be like a holier than thou, cast stones at people and say, this is the right way, this is the wrong way. It's just to inject some levity and some humor into the conversation. And also to help people maybe to recognize that everybody thinks they're right. That's what I've noticed. Like everybody thinks they're right. And not everybody can be right necessarily. You have to be able to recognize that like I might be incorrect with my opinions or my assumptions. So I think part of, you know, to break it down, the cultural condition and the climate we're in right now is we're in a climate of everybody is an expert, right? Everybody is an expert. And I think especially with social media, which is something I've been studying a long time, right? Like when I entered that program, I was on the first wave of YouTube and Facebook, where people all of a sudden have a platform now. And we're conflating this idea because we have a platform and we have a perspective that means that we're right. And, you know, social media is performative, right? People don't share their bad trips necessarily. People don't share the bad parts of their day. Like the whole point of social media is a highlight reel. So I think that as like, especially I will use the word industry, it's kind of a, you know, questionable territory we're in, but like after having gone to a bunch of these conferences, met a bunch of these people, interviewed them, there are lots of people who think that we have an industry and they're making moves accordingly. So I just, I think that, you know, we live in this climate where everyone's an expert. Like if you remember, we went from COVID, from everybody having an opinion about COVID and, you know, all these people being armchair virologists, to the issue, to the occupation of Ukraine. And all of a sudden, overnight, everybody becomes a geopolitical expert. It's like, how did that happen? Right. And I think the same thing is happening with psychedelics now, where like I've noticed this and I've been vocal about it, where there are people who are, you know, starting companies or getting involved with them, or they just want to have their voice. And that's human. It's like, you want to have agency, you want to be respected, et cetera. But it gets really concerning to me when people who are within, you know, 2 years of having had their first experience, or less in some cases, all of a sudden are building brands, they're building platforms, they're building coaching services, and they see that I can make money doing this. And the fact is that you can make money doing it. There are plenty of coaches out there who are leveraging the algorithm with TikTok or with Instagram, et cetera, who are building robust businesses, because that's just seems to be how our society is set up right now. That people, like, I'll give you another good example. I'm on a Signal group, right? I got invited into it. It's for mushroom professionals. I just kind of stay quiet and lurk there.
I wonder if it's the one I'm in.
Well, what I've noticed, people just take the advice of anonymous strangers as fact. And I'll hear, you know, people will say like, oh, I have this client who's breastfeeding and they want to know about this combination. And then someone with the name like Dark Hat Wizard will give their perspective and they'll go, oh, thanks for clearing that up. And I'm like, are we really just going to like accept that every voice in this movement is equal? You know, so, you know, I'm not going to say that I'm an authority on it, but I will say that having had 15 plus years of experience and seeing in my own life that sometimes consequences take years to properly appreciate and unfold, I'm very concerned about these, you know, overnight armchair psychedelic authorities that are popping up who are just blanketly quoting or pulling from Michael Pollan or from, you know, choice headlines or whatever, and then running businesses, because I think that that's a recipe for disaster. And I think that we're not going to see the long tail of some of these effects for another couple of years right now. Yeah. Lots of people are still in the honeymoon phase with psychedelics, and it's never good idea to dispense life advice when you're in a honeymoon phase, because you haven't seen the full spectrum.
This is funny because I was just about to write an email about like not taking business advice from like random people, like, you know, who don't actually have a business that's successful. It's like, because someone actually just wrote me the other day telling me exactly how to run my business, and I went and looked him up and I'm like, this guy doesn't even have a business. So why is he trying to give me advice when I've been doing this? This is my third business and I've been doing this for, you know, like my whole entire career. And it's kind of the same thing. And it's funny because I've made, you know, I've struggled with this kind of, you know, like, especially because I do serve a lot of people who are stepping into the space. You know, most of my clients actually are not in the psychedelic space, believe it or not. But there's people who are integrating, you know, whatever it is, like, you know, underground therapy or microdosing coaching or whatever it is into their other practice. I've been lucky, and really no one I work with is like totally new and unexperienced, because that's where, you know, I keep questioning, like, how is this all going to unfold? And that's where I say, well, maybe we have to learn the hard way, meaning I personally, it's like when I was younger, the way I learned was having some bad experiences, right? Like I've sat with someone in a very questionable space where I had to go through that and learn like, oh, I should really be more discerning about who I sit with, you know, in whatever ayahuasca space or whatever it is. And that's where I keep wondering, and, you know, not to say like this will all play itself out, but to really educate people on discernment and education and like really do your due diligence, you know, like, because there are people out there on the internet saying like, well, you know, if DMT comes to you, that means it's time, you know, like that one's been my favorite. I'm like, what? Like, I don't know if I believe that, you know, or it lands in your lap, so it must be like divine. And then you have a really bad experience or you get injured or, you know, in some cases there have been deaths. You know, like, let's not forget, you know, I know mushrooms is one thing, but some of these medicines are actually deadly. So it has been really interesting. And I've been trying to take this, like, you know, how do we show up as leaders and voice our opinion, but also let it all play itself out? Because I can't control what the 22-year-old on TikTok says. You know, I can only control what I say. But I'm curious, you know, you've talked about, you know, you've kind of like called this out with your satire. And my favorite was recently this amazing article, which actually was not satire, at least I don't think so, on Lucid News about social media and all the overnight experts. You know, what are your views on like how this might go? Because what about this idea that like, well, if psychedelics just get to more people and more people are healed, then maybe it's okay. Like, how do you feel about that? Because I hear that from other people as well.
I guess I'm bracing for a wild ride over the next couple of years, because I just see that there's people pivoting from all kinds of different spaces and backgrounds, which is a good thing in general. I think that this dialogue that we're having is a good thing right now, that people are interested in psychedelics. We want to make it more mainstream. That's something that I've grappled with for a long time, where I've had to kind of, as I mentioned earlier, keep a lot of my psychedelic experiences in the closet because I was a high school teacher. You know, I come from a conservative family and I'm going to barbecues with my Catholic lawyer friends. Like, how does this, you know, paradigm shifting, momentous psychedelic ecstatic experience fit into watching football and barbecuing? Like, it didn't. But now it's starting to become more accessible, more palatable to people. So I think it's a good thing that these conversations are happening. But as far as like how we position ourselves for the year ahead or as a leader, how you show up, I think it's so important to be so intersectional as much as possible. I've noticed so many people just blatantly trumpeting the psychedelic experience. They're talking about how it transformed their lives. And you're like, how? And you can't necessarily punch in there. They're just, I don't know, something really profound happened. You know, it's and I've noticed this spending time in Mexico, that a lot of people in South America, I've been very fortunate to travel over all over the world. A lot of people romanticize a lot of these indigenous cultures and think that like, I'm going to go down there and all the answers are going to come to me. And I don't think that's necessarily the case. It's something that happened with the hippies in the 50s through the 70s with the hashish trail, right? Over in like Turkey, Iran, Afghanistan, as a lot of hippies went over there and just thought that they were going to transcend and become enlightened. And then all of a sudden it's like, wait, like they don't necessarily want us at their ashram for 7 years in a row or whatever. Like they want us to take what we learn and go back to our regular old environment and our regular old society and start to make some transformation there. So I do think it's important that when you have these experiences, because I've seen this a lot, I've seen it in myself, I've seen it in people in these ayahuasca circles and spiritual circles, like whatever you're learning, like it's only going to go so far as you can bring it into your everyday life, into your family, your community, et cetera. So I do think being intersectional is huge. Like you had this pivotal, momentous experience. What are you going to do with it now? What are you going to do with it? Are you going to go start a commune in South America? Like maybe some people are going to do that. And again, no knock against you if that's your calling. But like once you have that awakening, what are you going to do with it? And that's something that I got to cross that bridge a long time ago. And I went through a period of tremendous personal upheaval where I've been macrodosing a lot, right? I've been, you know, I'm going to come up with this definitive game plan. I was in the Silicon Valley ethos, right? I'm going to have this download. I'm going to build a company. And then, you know, years later, it's like, wow, it didn't really work out like that. Like it turns out that I just, you know, I'm a high school teacher now and I'm married now. And what can I do in my own community? So as far as being intersectional, I try to read as much as I can about different topics, get educated. I try to travel as much as I can. I started my own business. That's been huge for me. You know, you have experience with that just in terms of like the freedom it afforded me. And so I think that's for me what a psychedelic experience is supposed to be, is you're supposed to have it and then you're supposed to draw from it and make incremental changes in your life and try to uplift your community. You know, it's helped me to be less judgmental, you know, to be able to recognize, like, that's another thing I really want to harp on right now is like in the social media and in the online community, it, for some reason, it's okay for people to just attack other people. And I totally disagree with that. Like, it doesn't get us anywhere, A. B, people change their minds all the time. So this idea, like, where's the room for absolutism in the psychedelic community? People who are just like so firmly entrenched in one position, like, things are going to change. Things, you know, people are going to change. Circumstances are going to change. This whole community is going to change. So I think being aware of that and like not putting yourself first as this like authority expert, that's something I'm personally tired of. And it's part of why I give these fake bios out, because I've been invited to these conferences and you know, they're asking me, what's your bio? And I start writing, Dennis Walker is a multimedia producer, psychedelic genius. It just doesn't gel with me. I'm like, I want to put my foot forward saying like, I don't really know what's going on. I have a baseline of experience I could draw from, have some tools in the toolkit, some connections, that I can draw from. But this doesn't mean that I have the right answer. It just means that, you know, I'm committed to being solution oriented and to hearing people's side of the story and to trying to diplomatically negotiate a way forward that does the most amount of good possible for the most amount of people. And so that's sort of my hill I'll want to die on, is that let's just try to, you know, move psychedelics into the mainstream, get as many people as possible, the most access as possible, and then see what happens. Maybe these plants and entheogens have their own agenda and we're just totally naive to it, right?
There's that theory. Yeah, to sum up what you said, maybe get your ego in check. Because it's true, you know, like I thankfully have not been attacked that much, but I do, you know, once in a while get some kind of feedback, and it's usually really out of the blue for absolutely no reason. And it's such a projection of like, you know, like here's the right way and who are you? And people think I'm like this big famous person with shitloads of money. And I'm like, no, I'm actually just a normal person with a business. You know, like I don't, it's like they see you on the internet and think this one thing and assume you're this and this and this. And I'm like, you know, what do you know? But it's really just reflects so much of like the collective ego out there. And like you said, this absolute like my way or the highway, I don't even want to hear what you have to say. And I don't really believe that this is doing anyone good, because like you said, like for me, I feel the same way. I'm all about cognitive freedom. I mean, that was the whole point of this in the first place. For anybody to really be able to go work with these plants and expand however they want. You know, I really do believe in that. But sometimes the division in this industry is kind of concerned me to the point where I'm like, I don't even know if I want to be a part of this. Like I've actually just kind of stuck in my own little bubble and like try not to get involved in the drama. I've been trying to be pulled into certain dramas and I'm like, you know what, like I'm just doing my thing and you do yours and don't involve me in your drama, especially if it has nothing to do with me. You know, I'm curious, you know, you've talked about starting up and hopefully you're okay talking about this on the podcast, but starting up some kind of like a media collective.
Totally.
Can we talk about this?
Yeah, let's do it, please.
Yeah. What is your vision for this? And I'm curious, you know, is it to come up with certain standards or rules or like, you know, code of ethics? Like, I'm curious what your vision is for how this future might go when it comes to social media, when it comes to publications and big voices out there in the psychedelic space.
I think really what's driving it is I've noticed a lot of really valid, really cogent and articulate independent psychedelic platforms and media out there, and mutual friends of ours, I'm sure, right? Like some of the ones that come to mind is like Love Psychedelics Today. I love what they've built. You know, they were in the space early. I'm a fan of Paul Austin. You know, not everyone is, but I like Third Wave. I think that he also has done something, you know, very interesting. And Double Blind is a good example. Like they've built something, you know, that's very interesting. And it doesn't mean I have to agree with everyone's points all the time. It's just the sense that there's independent media that and I think that's a very good thing, right? That we have independent media, because I started to notice that people with bankrolls from other industries are getting into the space heavy right now. And it's something that I've noticed just happening at light speed. And people who literally will like buy a company, rebrand it or whatever, you know, buy a public company and then pivot. And their whole end goal is really informed by a desire to make money off of this space. Now, I'm not naive to the point where I think like everyone should live in tree houses and play with rocks and squirrels. Like I think people should make money. But to me, when you're pivoting from another space and you're kind of taking that foot forward, it's questionable about where the space is going to go. And I've been concerned with some of the headlines I've seen being pushed recently. Can't name too many names, but one that I'll say is that there's been this series of articles going around. One is about how real estate is actually the foundation for psychedelic medicine. And then there's another one about non-psychedelic psychedelics. And then there's another one about psychedelics as work perks. So you start to see like, wow, they're really, whoever's pushing these agendas, it's starting to sound a lot like psychedelics are just this extension of our, you know, hyper consumer oriented capitalist paradigm that we have. Now, I'm not a social theorist necessarily, or like, you know, a Marxist or this or that, but I will say that anything that's purely profit driven that's coming into the space concerns me about the narrative that they're pushing. And that's where I think something like a coalition could come in, where you have people who very clearly came into the space because psychedelics were important to them, because they were studious. You know, another thing, a lot of people pivoting into the space have not studied these, quote, shoulders that we stand on of giants, not just in the Western tradition, but looking back to, like, you know, more Eastern or indigenous traditions. I feel like there are people who are running large platforms out there, and increasingly so moving into the space, who don't really have that breadth of knowledge or an understanding of that lineage. And I would rather build a coalition of people who did appreciate, who do appreciate that we are a continuation of a much longer and older process. And we have a chance right now to steer it in a direction that does a lot of good for society, that really takes a lot of these lessons we learned, or I would like to think that a lot of us have learned about being more appreciative of the planet, being better ecological stewards, being better social stewards, right? Looking at what decentralization actually looks like, as opposed to these top-down narratives of, like, you know, one small group is in control and the rest of us just have to abide by what they say. You know, it's basically we're kind of looking at the very nuts and bolts of society. I think when you have a psychedelic experience, at least that's my classic experiences, is thinking about, why do we value money in the way that we value it? Why is our society set up in this way? And we've come to a point where I think, you know, people are sick, and a lot of people are sick, and it could be a spiritual affliction, could manifest in physical affliction, right? We have unprecedented numbers of depression, suicidality, PTSD, et cetera, et cetera. Those are symptoms of a very sick society, right? So this idea that we're just going to take psychedelics and make them big pharma 2.0, that's really what's being pushed right now. And anyone who doesn't see that being pushed isn't in those rooms with the people having these conversations, who are already making their, you know, Q4 projections for 2025. This is what's happening. So, I mean, I'm in a weird position where I'm kind of like at some of the tables with some of these folks. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying, like, I'm not going to burn this bridge right now. I'm going to hear them out. I'm going to talk to them, because either they're going to do it that way and we're going to drive in this direction, or we're going to have to figure out a way to work with them and to find a way to compromise, is sort of where I'm at right now. And this comes from multiple years of conversations with C-level executives, you know, sitting down in the room one-on-one with people like this and recognizing, like, this is where it's going. It's going towards a medicalized, regulated, legal, profit-oriented model. That's the direction it's going. What do you do once you know that it's going that way? So that's where I'm at.
Oh my God, you said everything I've been feeling into and actually really struggling with. You know, when the recent bill in Colorado was passed, which, you know, I have mixed views about, where it's like, oh, it's legal, and there's some things in the background that were maybe not really for the greater good of all, you know, and I have a lot of concerns. And the more people I've interviewed, that, again, like, pretty much everybody I interview here has been on this path for a really long time. And it has been a life-changing experience. It's not people that entered into this space because they want to make money, which, by the way, I did a Facebook Live recently about how I actually gave someone back their money and told them off, you know, nicely, because the woman quite literally booked some coaching with me to figure out how to quickly make money in the psychedelic world. And it was just, like, eye-opening to hear what she said within, like, 15 minutes of the conversation. And my heart was, like, wrenched by it. And it just hit me so hard that, okay, there are people like this. And that's, you know, again, I try not to judge, but it's against my own personal values to have people that literally, like, it's a very long story, but she wanted to get into the psilocybin therapy business. And I actually asked the simple question of, have you ever worked with psilocybin before? And she said, that's not relevant.
Right.
And I said,
right,
you know what? I don't think you should work with me. And I just gave her money back. And that was that. But, you know, I'm good curious, because I've been to, you know, a couple of these conferences, and I know you've been, like, very entrenched in this world. And I have struggled at some, you know, just with some people I meet at these conferences or the things I hear. And I'm trying to, again, like, take this approach of, like, you know, let me just do my work and know that, you know, I try to do my best as a solid person. And who am I to say that this one venture capitalist is bad, you know? But I'm curious, you know, what is your take on, let's say, like, the VC world? And, like you just said, people are already projecting out, like, into 2025. And do you know, because I keep saying the more we have these conversations, the more we'll hold them accountable for bringing in reciprocity, for getting this done, like, maybe the right way, that's actually for the greater good. But do you feel like, what's happening behind the scenes? Is it really still just, like, you know, pharma 2.0, but now psychedelic pharma? Is it really just, like, you know, bottom line profits? Like, are these people that are running these businesses and the people funding it, like VCs, like, have they actually had any psychedelic experiences? Like, do you, what's the real truth behind the scenes? Because, you know, essentially everybody just labels like business and venture capital is like bad. And I'm like, well, do we know they're all bad?
Yeah. So to answer that question, I want some VC money for sure. I'll spend it better than they will. That's kind of how I, it's again, it's slippery slope. And I think that that's the direction it's going to go. Money talks. There's no way around that. And almost everyone has a price, whether or not they'll admit it. And what I noticed was like the position that I was in, I was just kind of this outlaw, kind of independent platform. And you know, I felt like I had my little niche audience. And then I realized after a number of experiences that I had where a lot more people were paying attention than I thought. And then all of a sudden I started finding myself in these rooms with people who have, you know, nine figures that they're, you know, overseeing, or like $20 million plus funds. That's huge money. That's like unimaginable levels of wealth to me. You know, I'm very comfortable, but like, that's a whole different order of magnitude. So as far as like what's going on behind the scenes, one thing I've noticed is there's a lot of multinational companies. There's a lot of very wealthy people who don't need to get into the little slagging competition on social media. And that's where I say it's so important that as independent creators, as independent voices, you don't do infighting. Infighting is a black eye for the whole community. Of course, you can have disagreements, but I think that there's folks who just don't even need the small people, and they're just kind of waiting until the legal regulations get set. And they've got, you know, they've got R&D going on in Jamaica. They're coming from publicly traded backgrounds. I'll give you an example. Like, I had a few ketamine company CEOs on the podcast because I had a chance to interview them. I said, I want to hear what these guys have to say. And I think a lot of people don't realize how global this is. A lot of people are so regionally focused on like what's happening in the United States. But like, I could name drop, you know, a dozen people right now who are VCs or have funds or whatever that are not even based in the US, and they're dictating policies essentially, and, you know, opening centers kind of ready to establish, because to someone who has, you know, tens of millions of dollars, if the licensing rules come in Oregon or whatever, saying you need something, boom, it's done. Right. So I do think that's important not to lose perspective of that. Like, as smaller creators, as independent micropreneurs or entrepreneurs or, you know, psychedelic enthusiasts or whatever, you're competing against multinational stakeholders with limitless wealth. And, you know, again, like there are people who are based over in Eastern Europe and in Australia and in China who have front companies, essentially. And you might think that company's based in Denver or whatever, but it might be owned by someone completely offshore. And there's a lot of examples of this. And I obviously, for obvious reasons, I'm not going to go into detail about it, but I think it just becomes something to be aware of, that like, we have much bigger fish to fry than these little, like, you know, I have a disagreement with this person and I'm going to attack them because I think that what they did, what they said is wrong. It's like, you're not even in the same ballpark as the people who have limitless wealth. And I really think that's a consideration. And I think it's very clearly moving into psychedelics. Cannabis laid out a roadmap. There's a lot of people very distraught with the way cannabis went. And then we're finding out recently that, like, you know, Roman Abramovich and like Russian royalty and whatnot are essentially funding cannabis companies like Curaleaf. And like, this is bulletproof that this stuff has come out. And why wouldn't the same thing happen with psychedelics? You have people who are looking for an emergent market or whatever. It's the new thing, it's in. And I've seen huge amounts. I've seen crypto people who have, you know, billions of dollars from crypto who have now moved into the psychedelic space. And you see them, they're like, they flew in on their private jet to the conference. They've got their posse here. So like, I just think, have a sense of humor is what I'll wrap that up with, because whatever you think is happening, these people who have limitless wealth, connections to politics, et cetera, they're already here. They're already, you know, influencing what's happening. And to assume that it's going to be this, you know, people-centered model, I think is quite naive. I hope it is. And I hope that underground practitioners step their game up, and that, you know, there's nothing wrong. I would say being an underground practitioner is probably far better option for a lot of people than going this, you know, straight, narrow way. But I also just want to use this time to say, like, don't be surprised when 5 years from now, these stories come out about this company or that person was actually being bankrolled by this silent partner. And you wondered why, you know, look at the publicly traded psychedelics companies. It's been a bloodbath over the last 2 years. Who can afford to lose $100 million or $40 million and still stay in business? And not only stay in business, be everywhere, be in Davos and South by Southwest. It's because they have funding and they're playing the long game. And most entrepreneurs don't have that kind of runway. You know, for most of us, if we lose $50,000 on our business, we're out of business. That's not how it works at the higher stakes. So that's my perspective. Doesn't mean I'm right. That's what I've noticed.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that. It's funny because I've interviewed a couple of these CEOs and it is interesting. It's like, well, your stock price is like $2 right now and you guys are struggling, but things are great and you're patenting psilocybin strains. You know, it's been a very weird world and it's, you know, I've struggled being in this and kind of question where I'm like, oh, maybe I just like walk away and let it all burn up, or maybe it will create this like beautiful world that, you know, maybe we need to just go through the fire and see what happens. I'm curious, because one of the last conferences I was at where I was at a party and I met these guys, it definitely looked like, you know, they had a little stick up their butt, and I asked them some questions about their psychedelic experience. And it was, you know, very little to none. And I'm curious, you know, have you ever had like frank conversations with some of these big players on private jets? And I'm curious, like, what is your opinion on their actual psychedelic experiences? Have they done more than just ketamine at some party, or, you know, like, have they had a profound macrodose or five, you know, trips, or do you know, like?
Yeah. In the cases of the people you would think haven't had a psychedelic experience, it's really hard to judge, but from some of the conversations I have had, I would say that it's fairly limited. You know, I think that there are people who are getting into the psychedelic space very much because it's an industry and they're answering to shareholders. And as an example of that, I asked one of the CEOs of a publicly traded company what, if anything, they were doing as far as reciprocity initiatives. Like, you're in this space, you're making money. And they point blank told me that that wasn't a priority for them, that their main goal was to return value to their shareholders. And I actually respected him for not like white, you know, not giving me some bullshit answer. He just kind of like answered it straight. But I think that's something to realize, that anytime you bring in something that is going to fit this model that we've been, you know, living through over the last, my entire lifetime, right? And I come from a very privileged side of that model, right? From definitely upper middle class, private university, et cetera. You know, I definitely have benefited a lot from that. But my psychedelic experiences have very strongly opened my eyes to the need, in my opinion, for some kind of meaningful societal change. What that actually looks like is another story, because you have so many stakeholders. But there's a few people I could name, you know, and I try to be cryptic with my satire. That's worked really well for me, because I realize when you name names, a lot of times, if you're saying anything negative, it really just comes back to bite you in the ass. So like, I, you know, try to limit that. But I will say, like, there's a few people out there claiming that they're, you know, it's kind of like setting the standard, or like they're setting the narrative. And I would bet you hundreds of dollars that they've never had an ego death, just in terms of the way they talk about things, the approach. So, you know, I think there is also the risk of us thinking we know so much. You know, one of the things I've learned from extensive, and like, to be quite frank about it, like, I would say I've had maybe 1,000 to 2,000 psychedelic experiences over the last 15 years, and have had many ego death experiences at large doses and different substances. And through all those experiences, I just realized, it's like, the more you see, the less you know, right? Like, I don't have this sense of absolutism that like, I know how this is supposed to be. And that's, I think, what's made me so effective at satire, is just being that one white dude who has got a platform who says, I'm not an expert, I don't know the correct answer. Like, all I can really do is draw inferences and insights based on experiences I've had. And I have had experiences that have led me to believe that I should stay in regular contact with this psychedelic experience. And for me, mushrooms are definitely kind of like the grade A, what I typically gravitate towards. Although I'm experienced and interested in the broader pantheon of molecules, I find mushrooms to be very valuable. And also from like a sustainability perspective, like, pretty much anyone can grow them pretty much anywhere. You can find them pretty much anywhere. There are other substances that have become very popular, like obviously like Bufo and even ayahuasca and ibogaine. They're like, they're pretty limited where they grow. So like, you know, that's another conversation, but I've always found mushrooms to be something like, wow, you can find these literally everywhere and they can open that door for you tonight. And I can help you with that, you know, and I'm not like a sitter. I'm not like a coach or anything yet, but I have, you know, been able to help people navigate that. And I think that that's what I would love to see happen with some of these companies or CEOs and whatnot, is like, maybe I can use some of the influence that I have to sit down with them and to just like offer them tea at a party and be like, here you go. You know, there's another CEO who I'll give the other side of this. He's a real badass. He's a really cool guy. And his first psychedelic experience was with something like 20 grams of mushrooms, which I wouldn't recommend that for everyone, but he had a profound transcendental experience. Several years later, started his company, is absolutely crushing it right now. And I think that's an example of like, there are executives out there who don't always like speak publicly about their experiences who have had these transformational, transcendental experiences. I would hope more people would be in positions of influence if you've had at least one of those experiences. Not saying you need to like trip all the time, but like if you're in an executive role or whatever leadership role in the quote psychedelic space or industry, I think personally you should have had a macrodose solo experience, full stop.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that, because I was going to ask. I'm like, I wonder how you feel. Because I agree as well. And I think it will actually help, maybe, and this is my prayer, help guide them towards that place of being able to answer like, yes, actually, we built reciprocity first into our business. Like, I personally think it needs to be a requirement in this industry, you know, at some level. I mean, I personally believe it should be a requirement in all industries. You know, it's like if we look at the Patagonias of the world or the Dr. Bronners of the world, and yes, of course, we know these are not perfect companies, but they're at least doing capitalism a little bit better. You know, it's like, well, if we're going to go into this multinational world of producing something that potentially, you know, destroys the environment or destroys the world, like how can we at least try and do it a little bit better? And that's, you know, this is actually what, this is one of the things that really sparked off my initial Psychedelics and Purpose conference, to really talk about like, well, if big leaders on our planet or executives or CEOs or venture capitalists have these big psychedelic experiences, how would this actually shape the way we do business in general? You know, because I have met, exactly like you say, like billionaires, including like a couple friends of mine who are very wealthy change makers, startup founders in the world who, you know, like have seven homes and fly in private jets. And they've had experiences where they actually do pretty decent work in the world. You know, so to me, I've actually argued like these people are not all bad just because they have money. You know, I don't believe venture capital is bad. I don't believe executives starting a psychedelic business is bad. But it's more about, you know, this education and having people like you speak up, like exactly like you said. Maybe if we make it a requirement, you know, I use my platform to talk about this all the time, where it's like, well, you have a choice. Do you want to support a company that doesn't give a shit about any of this? Or do you want to support a company that actually builds it into their business model? So I keep having this, you know, beautiful belief that there will be a day where people just say no to the companies that don't care. I don't know if that's true, because so far society doesn't really feel that way, but I think it's maybe going in that direction. And maybe if they have a few ego deaths, they will reconsider how they do business. Or maybe there is like the actual meaning of the spirit of these plants. And they realize like, well, maybe it is more than just a money-making bottom line business where we have to keep our shareholders happy. You know, I don't know. This is my prayer. I know it's kind of like I tend to be an optimist. but anyways, let's get into a little bit about you and the work you do. I'm curious, you know, like besides your podcast and being an influencer, and I'm sure, you know, you probably get paid to like do product promos on TikTok or whatever, you know, what is your ultimate business? Like, do you grow and sell mushrooms? Are you starting a microdosing company? Are you a, you know, advisor to a bunch of these startups? Like, I'm curious, like, what's your role in this kind of industry besides the satire and the influencer work?
Yeah. So I primarily draw from my multimedia background, and my wife and I started a company 5 or 6 years ago that's been very successful. It's small, it's lean. That was always part of the goal. And we've been able to just pick up clients. And there's such a thing that I believe in, and I approach the podcast this way, where it's like, doesn't matter how many clients you have or, you know, how many opportunities you have, as long as every single one you have, you do your full due diligence, you do the best possible work you can, you cut zero corners. And that sort of ethos has worked really well for the podcast and for my business, et cetera. So I would say I have a variety of streams of income. And I don't really approach anything from a bottom line perspective. It's all like, for example, if there's an opportunity to make some money and I hate working with these people, I often will just forego that as you have given money back. Like, it's not worth it to me. I like to say I work to live. I don't live to work, right? So, you know, and as you can attest to as an entrepreneur, there are months which are fat months where you get a good payday, you get a good contract. And then there are months which are lean months. So I think it's always about trying to stay one step ahead of those lean months and the way that you approach your business and what you're doing. So like tangible examples is I have a few podcasts that I do as far as editing and producing the podcasts, which are outside of the psychedelic space. And I used to do a lot of weddings, but I got over the wedding business. So, you know, it requires you to be in one place at one time, but that was a good chunk of change for a while doing that. And there's a number of other things with the podcast that have turned into revenue streams for me. Selling advertising is one. That's something I've done a little bit of. I'd like to do more of it. And I'm thinking I've got a new podcast coming out that I think is going to release this week. That's in partnership with a bigger platform. So that's another stream of income. And yeah, quite a few things like that. And my wife is actually quite the sugar mama too, I got to say. Like, she has been a media executive for a number of years and most recently has started working with PlayStation, you know, which is a super top tier client. So like, we just went down to Brazil and I ended up getting hired for the shoot. We were down there for a while. So we make it work, you know, and we're working with Esalen now. That's something that I'm very proud of. I'm going to be flying up there in a week to go do a microdosing summit to produce the live stream. So there are a number of things going on. And I really want to build Micropreneur into an actual platform, like an onion or like The Onion or like Vice. And I've had quite a few meetings with people who see the potential of what I'm doing. I think the issue is that I don't have like a business model right now. You know, it's something that I'm working on. It's my, like, I didn't expect the podcast to turn into what it's turned into. And now I'm getting to this point where like, I have millions of views and I have, you know, 20,000 downloads on the podcast. And now I have published articles. So it's like, it's become far more expansive than I expected it to be. And now I'm interested in doubling down on that and turning it into a platform. And there are any number of ways that could look. But, you know, I have had conversations with people who are starting to talk about like dollar values. Like, what do you think this is worth? Or like, what would you value this at? So it's something that I don't know, but I'm also aware it's only 2 years old and I'm playing the long game because most businesses fail. That's a fact of life. Most podcasts fail. That's a fact of life. You know, everybody starts out thinking that they're going to go on a thousand episode run and they're going to, you know, produce this $1 million business. But like, the numbers are against you from the onset. So I think that keeping that in mind, my goal is just to keep the ship sailing. Like, every time I put out a new podcast, I pat myself on the back, right? Every time like I get a new contract, I pat myself on the back. And that's another thing I've learned from my experiences in the psychedelic universe is like, everything is ephemeral. Enjoy it. Like, I have a business mentor that I work with a lot. He's given us a lot of good contracts for different production needs for his portfolio of businesses. And he says, when you have a chance to smoke a cigar because things are going well, smoke that cigar, because most of life is about things falling apart. It's about putting out fires. So like, when you have something that's successful, smoke that fucking cigar. So that's kind of where I'm at right now with the podcast. It's like, I'm really pumped on the way things are. I'm going to enjoy this because most of my time is going to be spent putting out fires and trying to, you know, stave off competitors and things like that. So like, when you got something that's working, enjoy it, find a way to enjoy it. So that's my long-winded way of saying that things are going well, but they can always get better.
So good. Wow. Lots going on. I was like, what does he do? Does he make just microdose like chocolate bars? You know, it's funny because it's like, yeah, I know about the podcast. I read the articles, but, you know, and it's this world that we're in has just been so interesting with like the amount of products coming out and people selling blatantly illegal products on Instagram. You know, I've been offered things left and right and it's like, oh my God, I can't even keep up with it. You know, I don't like, it's just such a free for all these days. And, but it's, I actually find it really interesting to see like, how are people stepping into this world of psychedelics and like, what are people kind of come up with next? You know, like, and some of it's a little weird and ludicrous, like tripping without tripping. You know, I don't know. Maybe it is a thing. Ayahuasca chocolate, like,
right?
Not sure how I feel about that one. You know, like, you will not purge from doing this chocolate. And then I'm like, well, is this even like a thing? Like, what is the point? And it's been a weird world. I'm curious, you know, one of the questions I ask a lot of people, and I know we've talked about a lot of the future within like the business side, but what do you feel that our world is maybe, I know this is a big question, like how do you feel like our world is actually going to be when it comes to this like explosion in psychedelics and legalization and decriminalization and availability and education? You know, what is your hope for the future? You know, of course, we don't know, but like, what do you want to see in the next 5 to 10 years in our society? Like when it comes to how psychedelics might affect the world?
I don't personally have high hopes for the direction everything is headed. I think that on a personal level, that the best thing you can do is to invest in your community and to, you know, build those structures personally. I think the word is mutual aid, right? Or the term is like invest in mutual aid. And that's something I've done very heavily, I think, is invest in what I would consider social capital. If that, it might be a grotesque way to frame it, but like building your network, your friends, investing in them, et cetera, because I think that's really when the shit hits the fan, that's going to be all that you have left as the people that you've invested in, the community that you've built. And I say this after having traveled extensively, lived around the world, and lived in a couple of centers of power, I would say, like having lived in Malibu, having lived in Riyadh, and being surrounded by those communities, that I think that there is a pathological drive in our species for conquest, and that it's something that's played out against the backdrop of history through many civilizations. And I don't see why people think right now is any different than any time before. Like you look at the historical arc and it's pretty nasty. Like maybe some things have gotten better. Maybe technology has gotten smaller and it fits in your pocket now. But the overall impetus, I think, for conquest and domination is unfortunately something that seems to be a fundamental human attribute. And when I mentioned, you know, living in some of these communities like in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, and tapping into the billionaire class and the diplomatic class, people distance themselves from, you know, the unwashed masses. And that's what I experienced in Malibu and in other centers of extreme privilege. It's like you have people born into generational wealth who are never going to experience what it's like to be in a slum in Mumbai. And they probably don't even care about having an ego death. They just want to, you know, continue having that profitability, continue having the good life or whatnot. And I think we're going to see that map itself onto psychedelics. I think we already have. You're talking about a multi-billion dollar industry. You know, it's there's money. There's going to be a lot more money coming in. There's a lot of hype. It gets really difficult to separate out fact from fiction and what's happening. But as far as like the world in 10 or 15 years, from what I've seen, I don't have high hopes that all of a sudden everyone's going to get the message and, you know, going to be super kind to each other and all that. I think that, you know, I read a lot of trying to think of the name of the author, Ian Cohen and Kevin Kelly. I read a lot of these like Wired magazine techie editors, and a lot of them have talked about the dangers that technology have introduced into our world, like a technocracy, a techno-plutocracy. And I just look at like the corporatization of the world. I think it's just going to get more pronounced. And, you know, there's this pushback to be like, we should all, you know, invest in small businesses. But like, look what happened during the pandemic, right? All the small businesses get crushed. Walmart stays open. And I think that's a pretty glaring example of like where we might be headed in the next 10 or 15 years. And again, please take everything I say with a grain of salt. I'm a much better satirist than I am a social commentator, you know, talking about serious topics. But like, this is what I've seen. I've seen people who have zero interest in cannabis, who have multi-billion dollar portfolios, pivot into cannabis once it becomes legal and run some of the biggest weed farms in LA. Why wouldn't they do the same thing with psychedelics? So brace yourself. You know, George Carlin said, inside every cynic, there's a disappointed idealist, right? I'm pretty cynical these days. And I'm turning that cynicism into a cash cow with the satire right now. So don't be surprised when I sell out and when I take the investment, because at the end of the day, that's all you got, man. My game plan, my exit strategy, I'm going to sell out at some point. I'm going to buy a couple of passports. I'm going to decamp to a very remote, very beautiful area of the, you know, somewhere in the world. And people are going to wonder what happened to me. And that's what it's going to be.
I'll see you in the jungle. It's so funny because my friend that lives in Costa Rica, I keep saying, I'm like, I can't wait to throw my computer and my phone into that river. Like I, you know, I always say the same thing too. I'm like, I just want to like leave it all one day and like disappear off the planet. But it's funny because I used to be the cynical one that's turned into the idealist, the optimistical idealist, which I am now. So when I hear you say the opposite, I'm like, oh, Damn, my young, cynical, bitchy self is getting crushed right now.
I'm probably wrong. I might be wrong. You know, this is, it's an interesting point in our history right now. And I hope that I'm wrong.
Who knows? Maybe you should start, maybe you should kidnap all the corporate psychedelic executives and give them 20 grams and sit with them until they wake up and realize that they need to do everything different and see what happens.
It's crossed my mind. It's crossed my mind, Beth.
Yeah. I'll help you get it done. I'll come down to Mexico. We'll put a bag over their head, make it just another, well, I shouldn't be saying this on camera, right? Just in case it actually happens. I'm like, no, it wasn't me. We didn't give him like 25 grams of mushrooms, like fresh with up in the mountains on the mountaintop by himself.
Great way to spend an evening. Yeah.
I know. Dennis, one more minute. Where can people find you? What do you have coming up? You know, how can people just support you, buy your chocolate bars or whatever you're trying to sell right now?
Yeah. So the easiest way would just be to pop in your Google box, Mycopreneur, 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 because I've got a bunch of different things going on and I'm going to be kind of doubling down on that over the next year. And I'm pretty responsive. If anybody wants to write me a DM on Instagram or an email at mycopreneur@gmail.com, or just go on the website, mycopreneur.com, and I'll be out on the conference circuit, you know, popping around. You know, I love to talk to people and I love to, you know, offer my unsolicited advice to people. So if, you know, if I see you and I start yammering away, like that's just me. So thank you for bearing with me, everyone.
Awesome.
And thank you for having me on the podcast, Beth. This has been awesome. I feel like I finally made it. Like now I'm legit. Yeah.
I got to have you on my summit next year. If I do one, who knows? It's always a crapshoot. Maybe not this year, maybe. But Dennis, it was so awesome to have you on here. This was so much fun. Slightly depressing, but I'm okay because you make it really fun and enjoyable. And yeah, we need the satire. We need the education. And you know what? We do have to laugh at all this. Because in the end, isn't it just all big cosmic joke, you know, right?
That's what I'm doubling down on is I think psychedelics are tricksters in a lot of ways. Who hasn't had that experience of like uncontrollable laughter? Stay in that zone as long as you can. That's the only thing that matters.
Yes. Perfect advice. Thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Beth.
I hope you enjoyed the episode. If you're feeling inspired, I'd appreciate it if you showed your love with a review. And check out my YouTube channel where you can find the video version of this podcast. You can also head to bethaweinstein.com to learn more about me and grab my free business growth trainings. Remember, you carry your own unique medicine, and your medicine is what we need for these times.